He's your voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Let's start with one of the top national and even international news headlines in health news today. There's been a dramatic surge in colorectal cancer in young people, but we're not just talking about the United States. This is globally. Health experts saying what we drink and what we eat is contributing to this trend, including the consumption of red meat, processed meat, alcohol, sweetened beverages, and ultra-processed foods. Now, Dr. Brown, I know you are a man of consistency when it comes to health, diet, exercise, all of that. But what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, and it's definitely a concern. Unfortunately, I don't have much to add to that.
Right.
I mean, that is the issue. We know that, you know, our food, because of sort of the food supply that we have, to have it last longer, you know, chemicals are included into it. It's over-processed, and as we use now, ultra-processed food. All of those have to do with how our body processes it. And if it's not processing things that it doesn't understand, then that leads to mutations within our body. So if, you know, just as a quick recap of what cancer is our own cells that mutate. They end up having abnormalities. Either there's a genetic code that gets triggered, or a genetic code that helps to prevent it from getting triggered gets triggered, or some other aspect. And then these cells that are, again, technically ours, start to grow aberrantly. They just grow out of control. So you can imagine that if you are exposing our cells to different chemicals and inhibiting sort of their natural function, then their likelihood of developing, you know, cancers is one thing, and colon cancer is particularly not surprising because of again the things that we eat, consume, and breathe in, because that even counts.
I mean, and the thing that is so tragic about this, Dr. Brown, is I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are certain cancers that there's really nothing we could do. But there are some that we could prevent. For example, skin cancer. I mean, a lot of the times, you know, exposure to the sun, we act like, especially in our younger age, it's not a problem. We'll deal with it when we get. No, but you've already damaged the skin. So you could prevent it, at least types of skin cancer, for example, not all. I want to make sure that's very clear. But there are things that you could do to prevent colorectal cancer. When you look at the stats and the fact that it is the second leading cause of cancer deaths worldwide, I mean, that is, and if you're saying that diet is a big part of that, especially when you see, you know, the latest numbers from the CDC, it says there's been a 185% increase in colorectal cancer among people ages 20 to 24, so college, and 300, this is crazy, 333% increase in teens, high schoolers, 15 to 19 years old. That is unbelievable to me. And I would imagine that we could bring those numbers down, maybe not entirely, but I would think substantially if we just change what's going in our body. I mean, that's insane to me.
I think there's definitely an aspect, and you and I do. It's funny because you and I do talk a lot about sort of diet and talk about sort of other things that we can potentially or we consume that can lead to those issues. So yes, I mean, diet and exercise is a big thing, but I don't want to neglect the fact that there is screening processes also, and if we neglect those screening processes, that could be an issue. So
good point. You know, you're right.
So we should be getting, you know, colonoscopies is something that should be done, you know, routinely. You know, if there's a family history of colon cancer, because this is really, it is associated with genetics. So if there's a family history of colon cancer, then earlier screening is recommended. And I would also, you know, say that it's, you know, colon cancer and colonoscopy is really the gold standard. But there is also, for those who are lower risk, there is other genetic tests that can be sent out to determine if there's any warning signs.
So we finally invested in that a couple of years ago, Dr. Brown, for both Derek and myself. And the big reason we did that was exactly what you're talking about, which is that I don't know if there's anything gene-wise that we passed on to Chase and that he would then pass on to his kids, so on and so forth. And I think there was nothing major in our results. There was like one thing for mine that was, again, pretty minor, but it was like the only thing that they said, hey, you know, if you start to see this when Chase gets to be in his upper teens, lower 20s, have him looked at for this. Again, it was something pretty minor. But to exactly your point, which is that even, because there's always been the controversy of like, well, what if I don't know my medical history? I mean, I think it's worth doing genetic testing. I think it's worth knowing everything that you carry, anything, because there might even be stuff that your parents, grandparents, so on and so forth, didn't even know they had and that they passed on to you. So I think that is important for people to talk about. I'm glad that you said that, because we could, I mean, we could eat as healthy as we want, drink as healthy as we can. But at the end of the day, genes are genes. And so to your point, when you see that number of 333% increase for kids 15 to 19, you're thinking to yourself, how in the world could that be? Genetics does play a role in that.
It does. And not only does genetic play a role, but you can, so genetic is one piece, social is the other. So you can activate those genes. So so you can have the gene, and then let's, again, hypothetically say you eat right, exercise, and that gene is never activated. But given sort of the different chemicals, ultra processed foods, et cetera, those could activate those genes.
Right.
So there's a big component related to that.
You're right.
And then there's even with the screening process, you know, we can actually do things like Cologuard to look for, you know, the genetic code in our stool. So that there are definitely there. But I think the other piece that I want to say is people need to be careful about the warning signs. So if you're having, you know, if you're having unexplained weight loss, if you're having change in bowel habits, significant changes in bowel habits, things are unusual, you see blood, those are all things that you are warning signs that you really need to follow up and see your doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Any age.
Exactly. We're chatting with Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health, our voice of reason in the medical field. And I wanted to also talk about this headline. I think we've talked about bird flu the past 3 or 4 years with Dr. Brown and always like to just keep track of this. It says deadly bird flu is arriving early in Europe this fall, posing a worldwide threat. It has led to the deaths of hundreds of millions of chickens and ducks in just the last few years and has spread to dairy cows in the U.S. So far, 15 out of 27 European Union nations have recorded bird flu outbreaks on farms. What can you say about this, Dr. Brown?
Yeah, I mean, we have talked about this before, and it definitely occurs. It's, you know, as we said, it is cyclical. And, you know, the concern is that, you know, when we have these major outbreaks of bird flu, and we've talked about this before, that, you know, the concern about avian influenza is that it can, you know, there's a concern that it can actually spread to us. And that's our biggest concern. I mean, obviously, the animal population isn't great either. But we're continuing to keep an eye on that. I'm not surprised to see this. We do know that there's, you know, as birds get together, they spread it sort of very similar to what they do. They kind of breathe on each other. And then the virus is actually very infectious and can spread to each other. So we have to keep a really close eye on this. I think the most important thing is that there's going to be a small subset of birds that will get infected with viruses. That's just the way it goes. It's just a matter of, as it crosses over to different animals, you know, why is it crossing over to different animals? Is there a different pathogen associated with that? And we need to just be really careful about it, because we do know that it is closely related to birds, to animals, to humans.
I mean, and sort of like the conversation we were having before, Dr. Brown, is, you know, keep an eye on it. If you see, I would think, something off about either, if you've got ducks, chickens, you know, anything like that, you know, to report it, but obviously to you know, not just overlook it.
That's correct. Because that is definitely a concern that if, and again, the bigger the flock, the more likely it can actually get in there and then spread rapidly.
I mean, it sounds crazy too, Dr. Brown, but this is definitely the time of the year where a lot of times, not all, and obviously we're not talking about, you know, farmyard birds, but there are birds that are migrating, for example, and do you think that we could see anything make its way into the U.S. with birds just naturally changing their patterns and everything?
So very, very, very infrequently do we say 100%, but yes, that's 100%, because that's just...
I mean, look, I'm just thinking Canada, right? I mean, so like...
We have to be aware for it. We need to be ready for it, because that's what birds do.
They migrate throughout the world,
and this is actually how the flu is spread. This is why we have the flu season from, you know, late August to February. Mm-hmm. It's because of migration of the birds, because they're the ones who carry the flu.
Okay. See? Devil's in the details. We've got Dr. Brown here. And one more thing, as we talk about changing of the season and that time of year, apparently, even though we love the smell of the pumpkin spice or the cinnamon or the pine or whatever, all the feel-good scents, apparently this could be a real downside if you are starting to get migraines from it. That's just something to think about.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, unfortunately. And this is a great reminder for just to be careful. If you're having a party, or if you're having guests, make sure that if you do use any type of fragrance, that you make sure that it's, you know, that area is wide enough to handle that. Mm. You know, tight areas with, in particular, pine and cinnamon, and then some of these artificial fragrances, in particular from candles and air fresheners, can actually activate migraines.
Perfect. I always say when people, and look, I love going into different shops where they've got different scented everything. But when people walk out and they think, oh my gosh, I need to lie down, or I need water. I think to myself, well, you just put your scents into like overdrive.
That's exactly what
you did. And now your brain is trying to adjust to all of that. It's overwhelming, really.
And the nerves in your nose go directly to your brain. So
there you go.
Developing that.
Well,
yeah, just be careful.
And be honestly, careful. It sounds silly, but it, especially if you know you're going to a holiday party or something, or you're going to somebody's house and you already are either kind of on edge or not comfortable, or maybe they trigger you, whatever. Just know that if they also have scented stuff in there, it may not even be them that's bothering you. It might just be their house that's bothering you. Just saying, just something to think about.
I just found out a reason why I can't go to my sister's now.
Oh, wow. You know what, Dr. Brown? Listen, I think this just became you giving us the medical advice. Now I'm going to give you therapist advice. So there you go. I'll bill you at the end of the month, Dr. Brown. I appreciate you. And I thank you so much for always checking in with us to talk about everything in the health news world. So I appreciate
you. Absolutely. Take care.
All right. Thank you. You too.